Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you know what that intro music means, I hope. I'm Ben.
And I'm Scott.
And today we have a very special episode of Car Stuff. Now, we often say that we're excited at the beginning of a show, right, Scott?
Yeah, we do, because we, you know, genuinely are excited about the topics that we cover, because we do a lot of fun stuff here.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We've delved into the strange, weird depths of various car company histories. We've come up with a few, we like to think, helpful tips for everyday driving. We've seen a lot of neat stuff, but this is a first for us.
Oh, it is. Yeah, that's right. We're going to have a special guest on today's show. And it's an interview that we recorded previously. It's part of a push for the new movie, Furious 7.
Right, which is the official name for the seventh film in the Fast and Furious franchise.
Yeah, and it's coming out tomorrow. So if you're listening to this now, you know, when it's launched, when it's published.
Yeah.
This movie comes out tomorrow, April 3rd, on Friday.
Uh-huh.
Go out and see it.
And we've been watching the trailers for a little while, you know, when they're dropping out of the plane and everything.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I can't wait to see one of our coworkers, too, who's appeared on our show before, Christian. He's a huge Fast and Furious fan.
Oh, yeah, he is, definitely. He talks about it all the time. In fact, I'm guessing that he's going to go on opening day to see this film.
Oh, yeah, I got a Fast and Furious text from him when he said, what, you're interviewing people and you didn't tell me?
Oh, yeah, we probably should have brought him in on this one.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that.
We're still friends, though.
Yeah, yeah.
So the person we're talking about is the picture car coordinator for the Fast and Furious franchise. His name is Dennis McCarthy, and I wager that you have seen his work before, even if you didn't know. You've seen it before.
Oh, yeah. He's worked on five of these films. He started in 2006 with the Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. He worked on Fast and Furious in 2009, Fast 5 in 2011, Fast and Furious 6 in 2013, and now he's worked on Furious 7. And not only that, I mean, he's worked on several other films, on some television shows.
Right.
But what this guy does, I mean, so people probably don't know what a picture car coordinator does. What he does is he translates what the character would be like in real life to the automobile. So like, you know, he makes a logical choice for that character to drive. Like he chooses all the cars that you see in these films.
Right. And doing so, he assumes the mindset of the character. So not, I guess it's a little philosophical at some point, but not what would I think this guy would drive, but the actual truth. What would Dom pick for his car in Fast and Furious 5? How is that different from Furious 7, etc.?
How is his choice of car different from, say, what Brian would choose?
Right.
So he makes decisions like that, but he goes way farther than this because he runs a fabrication shop and a facility that provides all of the cars for the whole film. I mean, every car that you see in the film. So we had a chance to talk with him to discuss stuff that we might find exciting, stuff that our audience would find intriguing about his job, because I'll be honest with you, his job is a dream job for some.
Oh, yeah.
Even though we know that it comes with a high amount of stress.
Yes, super demanding, too.
Oh, definitely, definitely. There's a lot of time constraints put on him, and just, the coordination of all this, it's got to be just mind-numbing. I mean, how much goes on?
Right. So we'll do some of this stuff for the interview, and we might go into a couple of different areas between these questions, you know?
Yeah. Let's have a couple little conversations, you and I, of stuff that he talks about that maybe we want to talk a little bit more in depth about, because there's a little bit of side info here and there. But, Dennis was just, it was an outstanding person to interview. It was great to talk with him.
He's a super cool guy.
Yeah, he really is. He really is. So we led off the interview with asking him how he goes about making, you know, those vehicle choices and how he, you know, pairs that with a character's personality.
I mean, for instance, with Dom, I could go back and look at past films. You get an idea from that, obviously. Like, for instance, the very first movie, you know, Dom was driving, you know, Hondas and RX-7s. And, you know, at the end of the film, he gets in his dad's Charger and pulls out of the garage. And I think for me, it was like, okay, well, you can't, once you got in that car, you can't go back to a compact, you know, import car. And it kind of set the tone because obviously, you know, his dad was clearly a Mopar guy. So, you know, like most kids, you know, they'll kind of follow in their dad's footsteps as far as, makes the cars frequently. And so I've just kind of stayed with that theme ever since, you know. Muscle cars, big horsepower, you know, things that are just brutally fast and, you know, basically make a statement when you see them. And then you have a character like, like Brian, played by Paul Walker, who, you know, was just seemed more like an import guy to me, and in real life was an import guy. So, when part of the character Brian gets in the GTR, there's like a little intro movie before Too Fast, Too Furious, where they kind of connect the two films together. It just seemed like a perfect fit. And so we've kind of stuck with that theme, you know, ever since. But as the characters evolve and grow, we try to, you know, make the appropriate changes with the vehicle or when their situation changes. For instance, pulling into Rio, he and Mia were, you know, on their last dime. And obviously this car isn't someone that, you know, we drove by someone on their last dime, but it fit the part perfectly, which was the old vintage Nissan Skyline. So, it's just, there's a lot of factors, character, environment, situation, script, but that's my goal, is to get the perfect car, you know, for each character every time.
And when you think about it, that's a lot of stuff to do with these characters, because of course in this franchise the car is as much the character as the actor.
Absolutely. And that's why he makes, you know, some key decisions about the vehicles that, you know, the stars are going to drive. But then I said, well, I was curious about this. Okay,
yeah.
So let's say you have a scene where there's a parking lot, or you have a scene where it's a street scene, and there's a lot of background happening there.
Sure,
all those cars are happening. So you know, the cars that the stars are driving, we'll call those the star cars. And I was wondering, you know, does he provide all the cars, you know, like every single car in the film, or is it just the star cars?
Every single vehicle. If you see a garbage truck, you know, in the background. If you see a semi or an old Yugo, we source that car as well.
So every single car.
Yeah, that's incredible, isn't it? When you think about the background of these films, what's happening? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, let's say that you've got just a scene. It could be just any kind of corner, you know, someone talking on a street corner.
Yeah.
Every single car that you see in that scene, background, you know, all the way down the block, that's something that he has to bring to that set to be shot that day. I mean, he has to plan all that out and understand and think about what would be on that typical city street at that time of day in that neighborhood in that situation.
Like parked on the street during a car chase in traffic, you know. So the next question, of course, immediately you have to ask, how many cars is that?
Yeah. And what happens to them? Are they destroyed? I mean, which kind of leads into the next thing is that, you know, he runs this fabrication shop. And so he does a lot of fabrication, especially for these films. And I wanted to know what was the most challenging part of that. You know, in addition to how many cars he has to bring, but what's the most challenging part of running this fab shop and bringing all these products to the set? I mean, is it the vehicles themselves? Is it obtaining the vehicles? Is it the time constraints? I just didn't know what it was. So here's what he had to say.
You know, for whatever reason, it seems like each movie we have less time to build these vehicles than we did in the past. And like I said, in this case, we have basically a 3-month window to get this stuff all together. And for that off-road sequence, which obviously required, you know, extensive fabrication to make those cars do what they had to do, we were right down on the wire. You know, cars were being loaded on the trailers with wet paint, and literally, you know, I was putting two drivers in a truck and a, you know, to haul them out to Colorado, driving nonstop, and they would show up the morning of, and, you know, the guys would give them a quick once-over out there on set, and, you know, they'd be working. So, in my shop, if we built a race car for somebody, we might spend 6 months to a year to build one car. On a Fast and Furious film, we'll build, you know, the equivalent of, you know, 50 race cars in, you know, less than 3 months.
50 race cars in 3 months. You heard that right.
Yeah.
That's essentially what he's doing. I mean, that's an incredible build schedule. And I don't know how many people he employs at that shop, but it must be completely, you know, it must just be mayhem for months at a time.
And you guys also talked about how this process gets started, you know?
Yeah, like where do they all come from? Like, where do the ideas come from? Is it just him, or is it, you know, a collaboration of people? So that's what he discussed next.
You know, it basically starts with the script, and then there's a lot of people involved. You know, then we'll sit down, with special effects. We'll sit down with Spiro, the second unit director, the stunt coordinator. We'll start plotting out, you know, how we're going to accomplish all these various sequences. And effects might say, hey, you know what, I need two cars that I have to rig for this one gag. Okay, so two cars are built just for him. They might be a little bit different than the cars that, you know, the stunt guys are driving down the road, depending on what that action is. And, you know, and I'm a pretty good judge. If I, you know, look at that sequence and know where we're shooting it, and I can usually have a good idea of how many cars we're going to need to make it to the end. And, you know, I always try to add on one or two just for, you know, just have a little cushion there. But, yeah, that's, you know, probably one of the more important aspects of my job is just planning on how many vehicles will be needed and never running out of vehicles.
All right, this kind of led me to another question, which was about manufacturers and product placement.
Right, yeah.
And I was thinking, you know, a lot of films that we've talked about this too. Like, sure. When you watch a lot of films, you see that, well, it's interesting. Everybody seems to be driving an Audi, or everybody's got a Ford.
Or James Bond always has an Aston Martin.
Yeah, why is that? And of course, we know why, because it's product placement. You know, they're working, you know, with some manufacturer and they're providing vehicles to the set, you know, for the show. And I understand all that's happening, but there's such a huge mix in this franchise. Of different types of vehicles, import, domestic. There's just all over the board, and old muscle cars and brand new import exotics and just all kinds of stuff. So I was wondering, do manufacturers come in and say, yeah, we'd like to have our, you know, our Ford Focus in this scene. What is it going to take to make that happen? And he said that's actually handled just a little bit differently than what I thought.
You know, that's really handled on a different level. You know, that's done, you know, over at Universal Studios. But, you know, in the case with this one, you know, we have a great partnership with Dodge, and it's a perfect fit because, you know, obviously Dom's a Mopar guy, and it does help. It helps make these things happen because, they will give us, I mean, for instance, Letty's Challenger in the second act, I think they supplied us with 8, you know, brand new Challengers. Dom, which was a perfect fit, was when he was in Abu Dhabi. You know, you always want to keep Dom in a Dodge Charger, and they gave us a brand new 2015. It was basically a prototype car. They didn't have an actual one on the road yet. So it was great that they came through and actually built us 2 vehicles for that shot. And, you know, once again, that also ties into Tej's Jeeps. It ties into, you know, ties into Maserati, ties into a lot of other, you know, companies that are, you know, with Fiat. So, yeah, all that stuff helps, and, you know, the one thing we would never do is compromise, you know, the story or the visual on screen for a product placement deal, but like I said, with Dodge, it's always been a, you know, just a perfect mix and a perfect fit.
That's a good idea. They play off that that brand favoritism. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like I said, he's definitely a Mopar guy, so it all works.
Speaking of Mopar guys, apparently Dennis is a Mopar guy as well, because he was recently at the SEMA show in Las Vegas, and he happened across a vehicle called the Maximus Charger.
Now, the Maximus Charger is a big deal. It's a million-dollar car, but its bite is even bigger than its bark, right? It's got 2,000 horsepower, I believe.
Yeah, 2,000 horsepower. Now, this is a, I want to say that it's a, yeah, it's a 1968 Dodge Charger. It's got huge wheels on it, of course. I mean, but 2,000 horsepower. And when he saw it at the, you know, at the show, on the show floor, he said he just stopped dead in his tracks and said, that's definitely a car for Dom. But, and so I asked him, will the Maximus Charger make an appearance in Furious 7? Here's what he had to say.
It sure does. As I saw that car at SEMA, and it was really before this script was even written, and I was like, man, that is absolute. That car just said Dom all over it to me. You know, it was just one of the coolest Chargers I'd ever seen. And, you know, luckily as the script changed and developed, there was an opportunity to bring that car into the film. And, you know, I gave those guys a call. I talked with Tom Nelson, who I know, who was a builder. And the car wasn't completed, but they totally accelerated their, you know, their build timeline for us to get that car out there. They literally completed that car, you know, an hour and a half before it had to work on the first day. So, you know, like I said, appreciate those guys coming through for us. And as far as the car goes in the movie, I haven't seen it, but I know it's going to be absolutely perfect. So,
now, isn't that funny? He hasn't seen the full movie yet.
Right,
he hasn't seen the scene where the Maximus Charger actually appears. And, you know, just to be upfront, you and I haven't seen the movie yet either, but we've watched clips.
Right. Yeah. We were lucky enough to check out some clips of it. We have not seen the full thing, but I'll probably be in line with everybody else later tonight, actually, as you're hearing this.
Yeah, for the midnight showing. It looks amazing. I mean, this film, it goes over and above anything else you've ever seen so far from this franchise. And I just love the stunts. I mean, we're not giving anything away to say that they're dropping vehicles out of transport planes.
Right.
There's off-roading scenes.
Oh, yeah.
There's scenes where a car jumps between buildings or through a building, 80 stories up. It's amazing the adrenaline that you're going to experience at this show.
Now, with Dennis being an expert, there's a question that we always want to ask an expert when we talk to them. And that question that you had asked him, Scott, was, more about what he drives, right?
Yeah.
You know, I have a bunch of kids, so I have a Suburban, and then I have a Cadillac CTS-V 4-door 6-speed that I like driving. I'm trying to talk Dodge into building a manual trans version of their new Hellcat Charger, because that'll be my next car.
So he's looking at a Hellcat, but he drives what I would call I'm going to just say ordinary cars, and it's not. I mean, I know there's nothing ordinary about a Cadillac CTS-V 6-speed. I understand that, but I was kind of expecting Ben, and here we had an early bet on this, because I said, yeah, I told you I was going to ask him this question, and my guess was he was either going to say a Ford F-150, mm-hmm, or he's going to say something like a Volvo station wagon.
And neither of us won the bet.
Yeah, we didn't. I mean, I just thought, you know, I kind of felt like he was going to have something sort of plain to get around in town, with, but here's a guy, he's got just about any car that he wants at his disposal. They can fabricate anything, really. I mean, they can replicate any car in the world they want to, really. And I asked him, okay, so, you know, that's your daily driver. I understand that. But what do you have for a weekend toy car?
Yeah, I have a 65 Chevelle, which is basically, something that's a recreation of what I drove in high school. So it's here right now. That's my favorite weekend car. But, like I said, my taste seems to change, year to year, and I've always got something different. I think I have over 25 cars, sitting around here that I can choose from. So, it varies on where I'm headed and what I feel like driving.
So that answer is the one that I expected, because you've got the one for the kids you mentioned specifically, but of course also, everybody's got their special car, right?
Definitely.
You take it out on the weekends.
Yeah, but I mean, he says he's got like 25 cars sitting around that he can just choose from. I mean, he can get anything that's in his shop.
Right.
And they're all these real high horsepower cars, really something amazing, all of them. But he chooses to drive around town in that Suburban, that Cadillac, and then he does have that fun toy, that 65 Chevelle. And again, how cool is that to be able to recreate the car that you had in high school?
Yeah, that's a cool story,
yeah,
for
really
sure.
Is. Yeah.
And so we also asked him, where do these cars go after the movie is wrapped? We talked about that earlier, right? And we had a couple of follow-up questions on that too, right, Scott?
Yeah, we did. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, it's basically what we do is at the end of the movie, there's obviously not as many left as we would like or as, publicity would like. But we try to save anything we can, and maybe we'll take three cars and build one car. Try to get as many, because they're in such high demand. I mean, right now we have cars, in several different countries or en route to different events. People are calling for them constantly. So we never really have enough afterwards. But, they just kind of stay with Universal, and they're just used for whatever events they deem are, a great cause. So the cars that are crashed or destroyed beyond repair, those ones just end up getting crushed. They really never end up in the public hands for quite some time now. There was, some of the earlier films, some of the cars, did get sold to picture car companies and did end up, in auctions and whatnot. But I think now, Universal just likes to hang on to them because they realize that, they just always come in handy at a later date.
Yeah, and for some of us, that's a shame to hear that you don't have a very good chance of getting one of the vehicles that was actually in the film, mm-hmm. But it makes sense. And again, that's something that you have to have kind of a behind the scenes perspective to get, which leads us to another exciting question, which you had asked him, and you had thought of this already. He works with these actors closely, right?
Sure.
He meets them. He knows them.
I'm sure he explains the car to them, explains what it does, like how to drive it,
mm-hmm.
Maybe even walks them through it a little bit. I know that stunt coordinators do a lot of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But aside from the stunt coordinator, they're talking to him about the vehicles. And, if they have an interest in it, they'll ask him, specific questions about it, because some of them do. Some of them are true gearheads in real life. I was asking, does anybody just have a natural talent for driving? Is there anybody on set that just seems to get it?
Vin Diesel definitely does great with the car. I mean, like I said, they don't let these guys drive as much as they want to. There's a whole stunt unit that's doing most of that stuff. But he'll get in the car every chance he gets. Paul Walker obviously was, very well known for being a great driver. He spent a lot of time on the weekends, you know, up at Buttonwillow or Willow Springs or various different racetracks, you know, a true car enthusiast. I saw Michelle Rodriguez driving out at Race Wars on this one, and she definitely doesn't hold back at all and is, you know, ready to, you know, go full throttle in her CUDA. So, yeah, and as far as Tyrese and, you know, character Tej, you know, I haven't really seen them, you know, behind the wheel. Not to say that they can't handle it, but I think after as many years as a lot of these cast members have been on the film, you know, I think if they didn't have the natural ability, they're definitely getting it. Statham definitely seemed to be a huge car enthusiast as well. Very interested in what he was driving. You know, which, like I said, it makes it more fun. It's fun when the cast members are, you know, actually care about the car and want to hear about it or get behind the wheel and really push it to its limits.
All right. So, you know, when they get excited about the product, we're talking about the cars that they're driving. Of course, they're going to be excited to drive these things. I mean, they're amazing machines that he puts together. Mm. And here's maybe a little known fact. You know, I feel like Cliff Clavin when I say that. Here's a little known fact about the cars that he builds for this franchise. And I found this so fascinating when I just came across this somewhere. But he builds cars with a standard powertrain, with a standardized platform that he builds all of the star cars, I guess, with.
Right.
Yeah, and there's a very good reason for this. So I asked him to talk just a little bit about that standardized powertrain that he uses in all of these builds.
Basically, any time we can you know, replicate the same as many components as possible in a picture car, it's just a big help on set. So, you know, if we're out there and we wreck a car, well, that car still has a, you know, motor and trans being put back into this car. If a suspension component is interchangeable or the brake master cylinder, the brake calipers, anything like that, anything they can do that will standardize it is a huge advantage for us. You know, and they're basically, you know, 500 horsepower, you know, late model fuel injected motors. You know, we use the same 3-speed. It's basically a manual shift transfer without a clutch. I use the same, you know, 4 9-inch differentials. Same gear ratios, same axles, blind counts, you know, like I said, everything I can do to just make maintenance easier. The guys are completely familiar with it, and it's a lot less spare parts to haul around.
What a brilliant move that was, huh? I mean, to standardize the powertrain, that's a great thought, because imagine if you had all those different cars there, and they all require a different engine. They all require a different transmission,
right.
And axles, and, you know, brake calipers and all that. He has simplified the whole thing to the point where if any car needs a part, you can just take it off of a car that's not being used at that moment and make it work. It's a brilliant move.
Yes. And it's also a brilliant move time-wise, because time is going to be the ultimate enemy for anybody working on a production.
Oh, sure. And by the way, 500 horsepower crate motors in all of these star cars?
Yeah.
That's incredible. And I saw somewhere else, another interview somewhere, that he was asked why 500 horsepower. Why is that the target? And he said, well, 400 is not enough, and I think 500 is just enough to get it there. So
yeah.
All these cars, for whatever they're asking them to do, 500 horsepower seems to be about what they need in order to make it, you know, exciting and look the way it does on film. So,
yeah.
You know, with all of that, you know, it's knowing that he creates these custom, you know, standardized powers, you know, powertrains for all these star cars. I was wondering about the fabrication. Does he, you know, does he still rely on the old junkyard cars, you know, that he finds that he
right.
drags out of, you know, the desert somewhere? Mm. Or is it that, you know, he's just now building the cars straight from the ground up?
No, we definitely have to visit junkyards, which are, you know, by the way, one of my favorite places to go to. But, you know, but it's, we always have to find that shell, that starting point. You know, whatever it may be. So, yeah, junk cars are a little trickier nowadays because most of that stuff's long gone. But, you know, we got some sources, you know, out of the Mojave Desert, some guys that have, you know, big collections of stuff that don't have a big website where everybody comes and takes it all. So, yeah, and that's always fun to go out and, you know, track the stuff down, which is one of the more challenging parts of the job, is actually finding the stuff. Because, you know, we need so many quantities of it. You know, if you see one CUDA, that means that we probably built 8 or 9 CUDAs to represent that one vehicle. So it's a bit of a task trying to track them all down within you know, a very short time frame.
But of course, not all of these cars are tracked down and fabricated. Oh, yeah. Some are specifically targeted and then pulls them out. We had a question about a very special car.
Yeah, so they were tasked with finding a car that met a very specific need. And if you remember early on in this interview, when we talked to him, he said there were 4 factors that were involved here. You know, there's character, there's environment, situation, script, And in all of those cases, you know, all those factors combined, there's this one character in this film that is ultra wealthy, and they're trying to choose a vehicle specifically for that character. And boy, they made an unusual choice in this case, didn't they, Ben?
Yes, sir. The Lycan Hypersport. This is just a little bit of background. This is from a company named W Motors out of Lebanon and Dubai.
Yeah, Lebanon. This is a Lebanese supercar.
The first, not only Lebanese, but the first Arab supercar.
Yeah, the first Middle East supercar. And of course, it's a perfect choice for this, but there's a story about how he chose this. So let's hear that.
Basically, this is a car that this person has. It has, you know, money is absolutely no object. You know, he's in Abu Dhabi. He has a penthouse suite. And he has this one car that he's put in his vault. And, you know, this is a guy that would drive, a Bugatti or a Lamborghini, you know, through a McDonald's drive-thru. So it has to be something that's not just about the money. So the fact that that's the first, you know, basically Middle East built supercar is pretty significant. The fact that they're only building seven of them, and this the one in the film is portrayed as the number one car. You know, so it just kind of fit. You know, the only car that was going through my mind when I read the script was a LaFerrari, because I thought that's a car that, you know, it's going to be made in limited numbers. It's very expensive, but even beyond the money, the purchase has to be approved by Ferrari. And this was unobtainable to me at the time. So, you know, I really can't think of a better car to put, you know, in that scene than that Lycan Hypersport, because it just makes sense.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, it does make perfect sense to use that. And how cool to be able to have access to one of the seven. And then you built five replicas, correct?
Basically, what we had is we had six cars on set that were all built by W Motors. So what I did is I flew out there initially to their design facility. It was actually in Italy. So I flew out there. We had a meeting. And, you know, I said, you know, your car is perfect for the movie. It fits the story better than anything else out there. And at that moment, they didn't even have their first car completed yet, but they really put their production on hold, and they put together, you know, six of these movie, I'll call them movie cars, because they're not really replicas, because they actually are, they're built by the same company, but they're just, you know, a less expensive version. So it's fiberglass instead of carbon fiber. The platform was, instead of being, you know, a 800 horsepower Porsche, you know, race car, it was a Porsche Boxster that we just stretched the wheelbase, and, you know, they built us copies of the wheels, and, you know, the paint and finish was done, you know, in-house by these guys, so it's, you know, probably very similar to the quality you would get on the actual car. And, it, you know, in the end, when you put the real car next to the movie version, you know, it was really just the brake rotors and the calipers that would give it away.
Hmm. You know, I'm going to be mindful of your time here and let you go, Dennis, but I just wanted to tell you that you're doing a fantastic job, an amazing job pairing these vehicles with the characters, and the films are just incredible. I'm real excited to see this film. I've watched the trailers. Looks pretty exciting from start to finish. And I just wanted to say thank you for taking the time to, you know, to speak with us this afternoon. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem at all, man. No, thank you for the call.
So now, Scott, after hearing all these facts about this this film, I gotta go. I have to go check it out.
Oh yeah, and to know that, you know, like, to know all the other stuff that goes on behind the scenes, like, mm-hmm. you know, what a picture car coordinator does, and, you know, Dennis's job, and know that he's choosing even the stuff in the background that's a block away that you can kind of distantly see in the shots. I mean, it's all fascinating. I really do think his job is intriguing. I know that there's got to be a lot of stress, like we said, involved with this. That you know, I'm sure the time constraints are just ridiculous, but what a cool thing to be able to do also, you know, to be able to fabricate cars, be able to travel to Italy to talk with, you know, the Lycan design team and,
oh, yeah.
and have them design cars that are like a less expensive version of their $3.5 million car. by the way, we need six of them. That's amazing. What a fun job this would be, you know, at times. Other times it'd be very, very stressful, but man, I think a lot of people would definitely trade their desk job for something like this.
All right, and we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed doing it. We'd like to thank Dennis for the opportunity coming on our show here. And I don't know, man. Next thing I'm going to do, honestly, is leave here and get in line for the tickets.
Yeah, probably. I mean, it's coming up tomorrow. So, you know, if you don't catch the midnight show tonight,
mm-hmm.
definitely go out tomorrow or over the weekend and watch it. It's exciting. I mean, I've watched all the trailers. Like I said, you know, I mentioned to Dennis that, you know, they all look like just adrenaline packed. It really does. They've gone over and above with the stunts in this film.
Yes, and let us know what you think about it. You guys know we're huge film fans as well as car fans, so we're always on the lookout for something like this. In the meantime, while you're waiting to check out Furious 7, you can visit carstuffshow.com for a copy of every single podcast you've ever done. And you can write to us on Facebook and Twitter. Let us know what you think about this. Let us know what you would like to have covered in an upcoming episode. If you don't like the whole social media rigmarole, I get it. I personally get it. So we have a different way for us to be contacted. You can reach out to us directly at our email address. We are
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.